This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
The Orlando shooter has been named. We go there now on the Patriot Preacher. Welcome, everyone, to the program here on the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. As always, I'm Caleb Colquitt, your humble correspondent, here to bring you the news of the day. And one of the recent developments that we had, you may remember that last we spoke, which was, of course, on Monday, because we had that brief hiatus on Tuesday, and I may talk a little bit more about that here later in the show. But the shooting that took place in Orlando that we talked about, that we would get you the details on the last time we met on Monday, was a guy named John Newman Jr., which according to authorities, sort of in the wake of this, trying to piece this together, figure out what went wrong. This fellow was a disgruntled employee that wanted to kill some of his coworkers. He wound up killing five and then turned the gun on himself. Apparently, this particular person actually shooed certain employees out and targeted specific ones. Guy who used to work at this company that he goes back to and then gets, I suppose, revenge, according to him. But what has been interesting to me, because, of course, it's a tragedy no matter how you slice it, and concerned for the victims and their families who they were just doing exactly what we do, doing what many of you within the sound of my voice today are doing, which is just going to their regular job just like any other day, and then your family members don't come home. So, horrible situation to be involved in. But interestingly enough, as I predicted on Monday, you'll recall, that already within hours of the shooting, in fact, right after the show on Monday, I was checking Twitter and the different news organizations, there were already people calling for gun control just a couple hours after this incident broke, before we even knew the shooter's name or who he was or what the motivation was or even what kind of weapon he was using. There were already people calling for new measures on gun control. And what was interesting to me, and I predicted this as well, many of the same people on the left that were going after President Donald Trump for, quote-unquote, using the tragedy that happened in London, the terrorist attacks, as fodder for political gain, saying how insensitive and wrong it was for him to use people's deaths, to use this tragedy for political gainsmanship, were the same people that were coming out and saying, but we need to go ahead and pass gun control now that this tragedy has happened. There's absolutely no consistency here. Within hours of the London attack, Donald Trump was speaking and taking to social media, calling for a revitalization of his travel ban, the executive order that he passed, for the sake of security, according to him. And people were outraged. They were angry. They were saying that Trump should not have done that, shouldn't be talking politics when London was still trying to get its legs up under it and get back on its feet, trying to figure out exactly what was going on. But then these same people did exactly the same thing when there was a shooting incident. And here's the thing. I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, because anybody who has paid any attention to the news, especially politics, over the past few years saw this coming a mile away. Because there's a pattern. Every time any misuse of a firearm happens, the first thing that not all of the left, but a chunk of the left, that voting bloc, goes towards is they start talking about gun control immediately. And I actually made that prediction before the shooting even happened, that I said, these same people, the next time there's a shooting, of course, not knowing that this was going to happen in Orlando, that they're going to do exactly the same thing they're criticizing Donald Trump for. So here's the question I want to ask. Is it fair to use a tragedy like this for political gainsmanship directly afterward? Because in the name of consistency and fairness, calling on both sides here, if you're a Trump person and you got upset at the left for going after Trump on this, then you can't really get upset at the left now for doing what they're doing and calling for gun control. Now, you can disagree with them on gun control, and that's perfectly fine. But my point is, you can't get mad at them for just hours after the shooting takes place calling for gun control in the wake of that attack. I think, personally, and this is my opinion, I know that there's not a set correct answer on this, I think regardless of what the tragedy is, you really don't do anything but offer condolences and that sort of thing. It's okay to use a tragedy as an example of why we need such and such legislation or such and such policy, but can we at least wait, like, I don't know, 48, maybe 72 hours before we start doing that? I think that's a fair rule, because here's the thing. Being a person that favors logic over feelings, emotions, that sort of thing, which if you've listened to me for any number of time, you know that's typically what I try to do. It's a problem to make these big, life-changing, altering decisions that affects people's personal lives when emotions are high. So whether it's the travel ban or gun control laws, whatever it is, and this is one of the things that I got upset with Obama about, making the case that we needed to, as soon as Sandy Hook happened, for example, we need to go ahead and pass gun legislation right now while tensions are still high. That's the worst thing you can do. And that's part of the reason that our system of government works slowly, that it has these backstops and these systems built in to where you can't push legislation through all that quickly, because the system is designed to take emotion out of it as much as possible, for you to take a step back, take a deep breath, really think about what you're doing and what the ramifications for it are going to be, and then make a decision. And so even though I agree with Donald Trump's travel ban and have said on multiple occasions that I don't see anything unconstitutional about it, I think the Ninth Circuit got it wrong on that. But even though I agree with the actual letter of the law, I still think he could have held off a couple days before talking about it. Talk about it. Use that as an example and say this is the kind of thing we're trying to avoid with this. Just wait a couple days. I think that's a fair rule of thumb. You may disagree with me. You may not have a problem with that. But if you don't have a problem with that, I'm sorry, but you have no credibility criticizing the left for going after gun control the second that a shooting happens. So let's just all try to the best of our ability, maintain some level of consistency when it comes to issues of that nature. We're going to talk more about this in just a second when we come back. As pretty as you are, you know
you could have been a flower. This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The most effectual means of securing the continuance of our civil and religious liberties is always to remember with reverence and gratitude the source from which they flow. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Hey everyone, welcome back. You're listening to News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, as always, are the numbers. Did want to talk to you about the Sounds of Summer. They continue at the Shops of East Chase this Thursday with Jason Givens and the Wanderers taking the stage at 7. This event is free to attend and includes kids' activities like face painting, balloon artist, and bouncy house. Vendors on site include Fire Meets Wood, Blackfin Ameripub, Dothan Ice Cream, That's My Dog, Frios? Not heard of them.
What is it?
Frios. I'm not sure.
It's like F-R-I-J.
Yeah. At first, I thought it was Fritos, but that's not it. I was like, they're just going to have corn chips up there. It's Frios, I guess.
In Spanish. But, anyway.
Yeah, in Alabama Sweet Tea, you can register for a $50 East Chase gift card. So if you go there, you can enter to win that contest. So be sure to check that out. And we have other events going on this weekend. And for that, we bring on our good friend of the program, General Manager of the Biscuit, Scott. How you doing, Scott?
Wonderful. Good morning, Montgomery.
So what we got going on at Riverwalk Stadium this weekend?
Oh, it's a fantasy weekend. So all of your fantasies are going to come true, Caleb. Now, we've got Princess Pirate Night happening on Friday night and Harry Potter Night on Saturday night. So we're kind of taking a little bit of a detour into the fantasy land. It's great. Friday night's a great night for like a daddy-daughter date night. Bring the daughter out, put her in her best princess costume. We're going to have different Disney princesses walking around the concourse, taking pictures, signing autographs. And then all the little swashbucklers can still come out, and we're going to have a scavenger hunt and like a treasure map for all of them to try to find some prizes around the stadium. So it should be a really fun night for the kids. And then we ended off with Max Fireworks, so can't beat that for Friday night. And then Saturday we come back with our first ever Harry Potter Night, which we are so excited for. Our staff is just anxious as all can be to get out here on Saturday night to put on a good show for Montgomery. If you're a fan of Harry Potter, you have to come out to this game. There's going to be all kinds of different promotions going on, video clips, interactive stuff, and then we've got a massive Max Fireworks after the game with that the soundtrack to it is going to be Harry Potter music throughout. So really cool night. Again, we've been getting a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement about it. Should be a sellout night on Saturday, so get your tickets early because we could sell out by the time Saturday gets here.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you brought up Harry Potter Night and this specifically because now I know you have nothing to do with this. This is all people on our end. But the way they handled the Biscuits advertising, if you ever listen to any of our broadcasts right here on News Radio 1440, listen to the Biscuits games, you'll notice that during the commercial breaks, we'll play promos for what's coming up with the Biscuits. And they get different radio personalities up here to voice different ads. It seems to me that I always get one of two kind of ad. I always get the nerd ads and I always get the redneck ads. So when we did, which I mean is appropriate, I understand why they do that. The person that we've got in charge of promotions always does that for me. But I always get like country music night. I got Harry Potter night this time. I got superhero night. So like,
find your passion.
Right.
Your passion.
I mean, it fits. All the nerd stuff, they always give me that. But that's
Star Wars night.
Actually, I don't think I got Star Wars night this time.
We'll redo it.
We'll recast it. See, what would be great is we need to get Liam Neeson, since he was a Jedi, to come in and do that ad. See if we can work that out. But anyway, so what else does the Biscuits have going on this season?
Well, other than being in first place, not much. No, we officially took over first place last night for the first time since like the second week of the season. So we're excited about it. We've got 12 games left in the first half. Obviously, in Southern League, we play two different halves. So the first half champion automatically gets a playoff berth. So if we can clinch the first half in the next 2 weeks, then we're already in the playoffs come September. So it's a really important time. We really hope people come out this weekend. We're playing Chattanooga, who's one of the teams we're fighting for first place. So, again, it's a very important series. We just announced our All-Stars. The Southern League announced the All-Stars last year, and the Biscuits had six players named. So there's a lot of talent, a lot of great baseball to be seen, plus a lot of really cool stuff going on this weekend as well. And one of the things that I mentioned, the soundtrack for the fireworks for Harry Potter Night, we're actually going to have a horn group from Auburn come out that's going to be playing Harry Potter music as people enter the gates, that are going to do some inning breaks where they're going to play the John Williams score. So, again, just we're doing everything we can to make this as fun as possible. Now we just need the fans to come out, support the team, make sure we have good crowds so that we can continue to push them into first place and hopefully into a playoff berth.
Yeah, folks really need to go to Harry Potter Night and wear their Hogwarts robes because that's real breezy. That'll give you some breathing room.
One of the perks of being a GM of a minor league baseball team is I've been getting texts all week from Amazon saying, your adult Harry Potter costume has shipped. Your Gryffindor tie has shipped. And I'm like, hey, this is my life now. But, our staff are going to be dressed up, whether it's our game day guest services staff or full-time staff are going to be wandering around. So a lot of great picture opportunities and hopefully making some memories.
Yeah, you guys really do go full force on whatever it is, whether it's Star Wars night, Harry Potter night, superhero night. You make sure that all your people, your staff are dressed up, that they're part of the theme. It really makes it feel like you guys are trying really hard to make sure that the fans, the hardcore fans, the nerds like me, are really feel at home. So even if you're not a huge baseball fan, of course I am, But even if you're not a huge baseball fan, you can go out to one of these theme nights, have a great time, and just enjoy seeing a baseball game, eating lots of great food with your friends and family. So great event to go to. I'm so thankful that Montgomery has the biscuits to do this. And like you were saying, the biscuits are now in first place. I think it helped a lot that we just played the formerly first place Tennessee Smokies and did really well against them. But considering that we're in first place, a lot of people I know that aren't really baseball fans and don't pay attention to it much, their biggest complaint is, well, it just feels like the wins and losses don't matter. Well, they absolutely they matter these next couple weeks.
100%. Again, from a front office perspective, that may have been the mentality in years past. So it's just a regular series, but we're really focused on the promotion now. I mean, as the GM, I'm down there. I talk with the players every day. I talk with the coaches every day. I mean, these wins matter. These guys get pumped up whenever we had a come from behind win last week. I mean, you walk into the clubhouse and it's like we just won the championship, and it was game number 64 of the season. So again, it's something that they take a lot of pride in. They want to bring another championship back to Montgomery, and the way we do that is by clinching the first half. Then we get 2 months to sell some playoff tickets and prepare for playoffs.
Never happened before.
Never won the
Although
first half.
Although we've won two Southern League championships, we've been in the playoffs numerous times. I didn't know that. I heard, I'm not sure if it was Chris, probably Chris on the radio actually had mentioned that the Biscuits have never won a first. That'd be good, just kind of relax the second half of the season.
We've made the playoffs four times. All four times we've clinched the second half. So, again, it'd be nice. Like I said, they don't want to take a break, but at the same time, it'd be nice to not have as much pressure in the second half because then they can focus on development and things of that nature. And then come Labor Day weekend when the playoffs start, we're ready to rock and roll and bring home another championship.
And you know, you talk about development with six players now in the All-Star. When you go to see the Biscuits, you're seeing quality baseball. You're seeing guys that are, I mean, they're just right there on the cusp of being major league players. And so, been watching a lot of college baseball this last week because of my beloved Auburn Tigers, of course, which got eliminated. But at college, I mean, it's great baseball. I love watching it. But you do see a lot of errors. The batting's not quite at the level of the major leagues, even though they have the bats that aren't exactly wooden. But, you know, when you're going to the Biscuits, like I said, you're watching people that are competing to be in the MLB, and so you're seeing quality players compete against one another.
A guy who pitched for us last year is starting for the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. I mean, that's how quality these guys are. Mm-hmm. Jake Faria just got called up. So, I mean, they're just a step away.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Scott. Lots of good things going out. Check out Riverwalk Stadium this weekend and the grand reopening that's coming up here in just a little bit. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Matthew 28:19-20. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. The Patriot Preacher is back, and I wanted to mention this briefly. So, the debate contest that I went to judge the other day, it's at Opelika High School. So, I'm right near Auburn, and I have a tradition that at some point, roughly this time of the year, I always go to Auburn and shop, because everything, all the Auburn gear at all the stores is on clearance, because baseball season just ended. They're trying to get everything, all their inventory cleared out of their store, so that they can make way for the new gear when football season comes, and so they've got tons of stuff on sale, and I saw this hat that I just had to have, which was marked down by about $8 or $9, and I'm wearing it today. It's an Auburn hat, and it's got the orange logo, the orange brim, and the hat is blue, but they did what Major League Baseball does. If you ever watch any Major League Baseball games on Independence Day, the teams have this new tradition that they do where the background of their hat is sort of a faded-in design of the American flag. And I thought it was really cool that Auburn made a hat just like that, because, of course, Auburn season ends long before Independence Day. But they did kind of a callback or a nod to the Independence Day hats that Major League Baseball players wear. And so I just saw this. It's got the American flag in the background behind the Auburn logo. and I thought it was really cool. And the reason that I bring this up is now is the perfect time to get that Auburn gear, and not just Auburn gear, Alabama gear for the Alabama fans. I'm sure it's the same way in Tuscaloosa. Drive to Tuscaloosa, go to one of their bookstores, grab some Alabama gear.
Yeah,
you can get it at a really good price.
It's a lot closer to Auburn, but the Alabama right. still not going to. Yeah, that's a nice hat. I have to. Ladies and gentlemen, we are a house divided, but I have to say that's a nice. I noticed that it's a nice looking. It would have been appropriate on Memorial Day, I guess.
Oh, probably so, but just wanted to give that just a little tip for all of our listeners out there, because I know we got a lot of Auburn and Alabama fans, almost exclusively Auburn and Alabama fans here in Montgomery. If you're an LSU fan, I guess you could go to, you know, down there or wherever else you may call your alma mater. But, you know, just tip for folks nearby, now is the time if you want to get any of that college gear to support your team. Now is the time to do it, because you can check a lot of those bookstores around the campus, and you're going to get a lot of stuff on clearance, get some really good deals. So just check that out. Back to the news at hand, though. You'll recall that not this past segment, but the one before that, before we were joined by Scott, we were talking about the Orlando shooter. And a lot of people on the internet, the people in the media, have thought themselves clever because they have tried to, the ones that are pushing for gun control now, they made a comparison of the death toll between London and Orlando to make the case that this is the reason we need gun control like London has gun control. Because the attacks in London, it was a twofold attack. There were guys on the London Bridge who took a van and drove around on the London Bridge and killed people and wound up injuring a lot more just by running into them with a car. And then the other attack that happened simultaneously in London, the stabbing at the nearby market. So they were comparing the death tolls there and the death toll in Orlando. So essentially the argument is 7 people were killed by 3 men in 2 different attacks. Took 3 people to carry this out. 2 different attacks, so it was twofold, and they still only killed 7 people. However, in Orlando, one person, just with a semi-automatic pistol, was able to kill 5 people very quickly. Well, there's a couple reasons that's not a fair comparison, but let's overlook that just for right now. For a second, let's take this argument. Maybe we should start banning assault cars. So these high-capacity assault cars, because let's be honest, just like assault rifles, if you have a van or a truck, the only reason you could possibly have for owning some, you know, a giant vehicle like that is that you're planning on plowing into pedestrians. You're probably a terrorist if you own a van or a truck. And when it comes to knives, if you carry a knife that's over about 3 or 4 inches, the only purpose of that knife is killing people. I mean, let's just be honest. There's no reason to have a knife over that. And the reason that I bring that up is maybe what we should do now is we should consider car and knife regulation. So any car over a certain weight, we should probably ban vans and ban trucks. When it comes to knives, there's really no reason to have a meat cleaver. So we should just get rid of meat cleavers, like any of those electric bread knives. Those are obviously just killing machines. So we need to get rid of those. And obviously, I'm showing you the ridiculous side of this argument.
About chainsaws.
Well, I mean, that's essentially a very big wood-cutting knife. But anyway, my point in all of that is these are bad arguments, and when you apply them to the same logic that people usually apply gun regulation to, they quickly fall apart. Because the simple truth is, especially here in the States, there are millions upon millions upon millions of guns that reside in this country every single day and never shoot anybody. Because they're owned by responsible gun owners that probably would never want to hurt anybody, with the possible exception of self-defense. And the same is true of vans. Not everybody that owns a van is a terrorist or wants to hurt people. Limiting the gas tank of a van so you couldn't drive as far to kill people, it makes about as much sense as the let's limit the magazine argument. And so when we're talking about these things, if the left wants to open up this conversation of comparing the two styles of weapon, that's a losing argument from them right out of the gate. So there are obviously other purposes for vans and knives, whereas a gun is, with the exception of target shooting, I suppose, or skeet shooting, pretty much exclusively a killing machine. I mean, even if you're using it for hunting, it is a killing machine, and I understand that. But the point is, you cannot assume motive based on the kind of firearm a person chooses to have or the fact that they choose to have one in general. Furthermore, when you're talking about comparing the death toll, 7 by 3 men and 2 attacks, versus 5 people that were killed by just 1 person that had a pistol, there's several reasons that this is a bogus argument, but I'm going to go to the one that I feel is most obvious. All right, everybody, jump into your DeLoreans, crank up the speedometer to about 88 miles per hour, fire up the flux capacitor. We're going to go all the way back in time to about 2 weeks ago. So if we go back 2 weeks in history, I think the left is forgetting that the Manchester bomber killed 22 people by himself, didn't need other help. There may have been other co-conspirators, and they are looking into that. And if there are, I certainly hope they find them and bring them to justice, because they have arrested several people that are at least suspected of that. But keep in mind that if that's the argument, if death toll is going to be the standard, that the Manchester bomber killed 22 people by himself, and it was just one guy with a bomb, that's the solution. I can't believe I never thought of this. We should make bombs illegal.
Oh, yeah.
If we just made bombs illegal, think of how many lives that would save, Joe.
Oh, I can't even imagine. It's just beyond comprehension.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the problem. Suicide vest, already illegal. You're already not allowed to have them, and yet somehow this guy wound up killing 22 people despite them being illegal.
And putting nails and screws and metal pieces.
Right.
We should outlaw.
Right. He used essentially household items, and it was, according to the police, a fairly well-crafted bomb by terrorist standards. But the point is, maybe we should outlaw glass and nails and everything else. Maybe that would help. I don't know. But my point in all of this is, making guns illegal will be exactly as effective as making bombs illegal, which is to say that the bad people are still going to figure out a way to get them. And that's the problem that I have with gun control, is that when you make laws to prevent criminals from doing things, the criminals ignore them. That's what makes them criminals. They don't pay attention to laws. And so when we're talking about this comparison, if you're wanting to compare different events, if you remember more than, 72 hours in the past when this Orlando shooting happened, you'll remember that just a couple weeks ago that we had the Manchester bombing kill 22 people by himself. You cannot attribute the effectiveness of these attacks and compare them and say, well, obviously the problem is that guns aren't illegal. Well, bombs are also illegal in London, but yet somehow this guy got one and killed far more people than this guy that had the gun in Orlando. And we don't know yet if the gun is legal or not. There's still people looking into that. And what I mean by that is the gun itself is legal to own, but we don't know if this guy had a history. We don't know if he was allowed to have a gun. We'll look into that. Whether or not the gun was legal really doesn't matter. What the guy did with it was illegal. So he's misusing the firearm either way, which kind of defeats the argument. But here's the thing. Keep in mind that if you go back about a year ago, that you had the Paris shooting, where they killed 130 people with a combination of bombs and guns, both of which are illegal in Paris. That's the problem with virtually every gun control argument that has ever shown up, is that the easiest way to defeat it is that criminals always inevitably wind up getting guns and bombs and devices to kill people anyway. So what is the problem? Well, the problem is a lunatic being willing to kill people. That's the issue. Let's address that problem. I'm not saying there aren't things that we can't do to address this. I'm not saying that we shouldn't look into trying to figure out ways to prevent tragedies like this happening. But what I am saying is gun control isn't going to accomplish that purpose. There's quite a bit of history to back that up. And if you want to know what that is, we'll be talking about that when we come back. 860-1440 are the numbers.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The general principles on which the fathers achieve independence were the general principles of Christianity. John Adams.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. We were talking in the last segment about the Orlando shooting and how there has been a renewed call, as there always is when there's a shooting, about opening up the gun debate. Well, here's the thing. The simple truth is, I welcome, and the vast majority of conservatives welcome, the gun debate because, quite frankly, it's an easy one to have. When it comes to whether or not restricting guns makes us safer, there are several debates, sometimes on conservative principles, where the debate, even if you're in the right, is sticky. It's a multifaceted argument to where it's difficult to navigate. This is not one of them. When it comes to guns, the data is overwhelmingly in our favor. Even, for example, the uber-left Washington Post could not find a contradiction in Marco Rubio's statement back in the debates in the primaries, where he said that out of all the shootings that we've had, not a single piece of legislation that was proposed in the wake of those shootings would have prevented said shootings. The Washington Post fact checker, which usually does a pretty in-depth job and did here, they went back about a decade to observe Marco Rubio's. Believe me, there were people that were working on this article that wanted to prove Marco Rubio wrong, and they gave him a rare Geppetto mark, which means that everything that he said was true. And so when you're looking at raw facts and data, even the people that are trying to disprove these claims have trouble doing so. Because the truth is, gun control has never in the history of the world made a society safer. You can look at any instance where this has been tried, it always turns out the same. Whether you're looking at Australia, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Mexico, Russia, France, China, every time these countries observe the strict gun control laws, it doesn't make the society any safer. Just to go to the numbers here for a second, let's look at homicide rates. Homicide rates the world over. Now, keep in mind, the vast majority of these countries don't have anywhere near the amount of guns, nor do they have the gun freedoms that America does. We outpace the next biggest gun-owning country by quite a bit. In fact, we have roughly 88 guns per 100 people in the United States of America. Now, obviously, that's in part because there are people like me that own several guns. So that's not saying that 88% of people own guns. But the point is there's 88 guns per person, per 100 people in America. So let's look at homicide rates, comparing the homicide rates with us and other countries. Well, the U.S. has way more guns than every other country, by a lot. And yet somehow, when it comes to homicide rates, we're 14th. Well, what does that tell you? That if people want to kill people, they will do it with or without a gun. Now, the gun homicide rate is higher in America because there's more guns. But as far as actual deaths per capita, we're only 14th. And all the countries that are from 1 to 13, they have far more guns and far stricter gun control laws. In fact, let's compare. Mexico's rate is double ours and has the strictest, among the strictest gun control laws in the world. In fact, the only way you can own a gun in Mexico legally is you have to go through an intensive background check, and they pretty much have to not find anything, not even a speeding ticket, in your criminal record to issue you a gun. There is one gun store in the entire country. It's in Mexico City, and it is owned by the government. That's how strict their gun control is. And yet, somehow, all the drug cartels have guns. Interesting how all the criminals just tend to ignore the laws and own guns anyway, even though it's illegal to do so in Mexico. All right, let's look at India and Brazil, who are first and second on homicide rates. They have almost four times as many homicides as America, but India has 8 guns per 100 people, and Brazil has 4.2 guns per 100 people. Keep in mind, we have 88. So if your argument is more guns equals more homicides, that is patently false over and over and over again. All right, let's look at Canada. Canada has a lot of guns, comparatively. Not compared to us, but comparatively to other countries. Canada has a pretty high rate of guns. And yet, they're 80th in homicides. So they're middle of the pack at best. Which goes to tell you that more guns does not equal more homicides, more crime. All right, well, let's look at the states, because what we're doing is we're comparing other countries. There's different cultures. There's a litany of factors that may play into that. So let's look at the states, because those are easier to compare one to another. Well, Louisiana and Massachusetts and South Carolina are second, third, and fourth when it comes to murders with guns. There's a lot of guns in those states, so that makes sense. So we could make the argument that more guns means more murders, except the problem with that is Michigan is fifth, and they have very strict gun control laws, and New York is eighth, which has arguably the strictest gun control laws in the country, maybe with the exception of California. Now, California is probably the strictest, but their firearm murder rate is well above the national average. It's not necessarily high. They're not in the top 10, but they're above average, which means out of the 50 states, they're somewhere in the top 20. Top 25, actually, but roughly, if I'm not mistaken, their numbers place them somewhere in the top 20. So even though they have ridiculously strict gun control laws, there's a lot of states with looser gun control laws that don't have as many gun murders as they do. Meanwhile, you've got places like Montana, both of the Dakotas, Utah, and Vermont, which have very, very loose gun control laws, and they're near the bottom when you compare them state by state.
You also have to look at the type of people who reside in those states.
Absolutely.
You know, what they may be, what their predilection for violence may be, personality-wise. You know, people in Montana are a lot different from
right, and there's a lot of cultural things that go into that. So here's the thing. The only trend that seems to be consistent is it's mostly dependent upon how many large cities a state has, because it seems like the states with a larger portion of their state with urban areas, with thick cities, with large populations, that's what determines more or less what your murder rate is. So it's ironic considering urban areas typically have stricter gun control laws. And of all the states, do you know which one's number one? Well, technically, it's not a state. It's the city of D.C. because it, you know, it's not within a state. And they have the strictest gun control laws in the country. And their gun murder rate is 4.5 times the national average. So 4.5 times more than the average. Their neighbor to the north, Maryland, is in the top 10, has very strict gun control laws. Their neighbor to the south, Virginia, very loose gun control laws. And they have a low rate. So the conclusion is there's no connection between the two. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
An Alabama town is ruining freedom. What am I talking about? You'll find out in a second on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome back, everyone. Hour 2 of The Patriot Preacher is on now. Glad to be with each and every one of you on this Wednesday morning. It's hump day, so we've just got a couple left before the weekend. Now, I wanted to talk about this because it's a local story. This story actually broke a few days ago, but with all the news and people dying in the news, we didn't get around to it. But this is a point I wanted to make, especially considering it happened in our own backyard. We have an Alabama town that I say is ruining freedom. And how are they ruining freedom? They are charging kids $110 for a business license if they want to cut their neighbor's yard for money. So it is now illegal in the city of Gardendale, Alabama, for your neighbor's kid to walk up to your door and say, "Hey, Mr. Johnson, I'll cut your yard for $20. You are now in violation of the law if you do that. So, like, here's the thing, and we need to take this back to the basic ideas, not make it specific, take it back to the basic ideas to really understand where this is coming from. Like most licenses, and this goes for business licenses, marriage licenses, whatever. Whatever kind of license it is a way for the government to control something. That doesn't mean that it's always necessarily bad. We have driver's licenses. We have hunting licenses. There are professions that have licenses, like being a doctor, that you probably should have a license if you're going to do that. And I understand the need for those things. But when it comes to something like this, where you are licensing something that is not life-altering, that if the person screws it up, the natural repercussion for that is not to have a licensing issue. It's for that person to not get your business again. I mean, if a kid says, I'll cut your yard, and he goes out there and cut it, and there's massive spots where there's bahia grass that's up to your knees that he missed, I wouldn't pay that kid. But my point in all of that is, like most licenses, this serves one of two purposes. It is either A, to line the pockets of the town, to put money in the town coffers, as it were. Now, this sounds ridiculous that they would enact a $110 fee to people that are going to be mowing lawns, and that will somehow bolster their town coffers. You're like, how would that make a difference? Why would that be their motivation? Well, now you say that, but let's think about it for a second. Let's lowball and say maybe 50 kids in the community of Gardendale, Alabama, sign up for this. Okay, well, that's $5,500. Not exactly a massive sum of money, but you could still get some projects done with $5,500. So it is possible that the motivation in doing this was, these kids are making money, let's take a little cut off the top of their business. Because keep in mind, the whole purpose of having a neighborhood child mow your yard as opposed to an actual lawn care service that has a business structure is that the kid, ideally, is cheaper. They don't have all the equipment. They're probably not going to do as clean a job as the professional lawn service people, but they're cheaper. And so because you may just not necessarily need all the fine lawn manicuring, and that's not really what you're about, you pay the neighborhood kid to cut your grass for $20, $20, $30. Well, think about how many yards they have to cut just to get up the money to get the license. And it's illegal for them to cut the yards to make the money to pay for the license, so they got to figure out some kind of way to make $110 and then buy the license so they can then cut grass. And so you're cutting into their profit margin quite a bit there. So this may just be about money. I don't know. I don't can't claim to get into the mind of the town council there in Gardendale, but it could just be nothing more than they want some money. They're seeing people make money. They want to cut out of it. This is a common thing with government. Again, it seems a little unusual for something this petty and small, but, you know, it's possible that that was the motivation. This is the same reason that we talked about with the constitutional carry regulation, SB 24. The same reason the sheriffs were against that is because no longer requiring people to carry a concealed carry permit if they have a weapon of some kind concealed on their person cuts into their budget a little bit. And that seems to be the motivation when they're honest about it. Perhaps not the only motivation, but one of the primary motivations to why there were a lot of law enforcement officials that were against removing the requirement to have a concealed carry permit on yourself if you have a concealed carry weapon on you. So this is not something that's uncommon. Again, that is a license. A concealed carry permit is a type of license. They are licensing you to carry a weapon in a concealed fashion. So it's really the same argument that we saw with that, is that because it would affect the budget of the police department there, they're worried that having that concealed carry permit taken away from them, that revenue would be cut off from them. So that's part of the motivation. It could be part of the motivation here. We don't know. That's just what we have so far. The second possibility is that it protects a larger business that was lobbying for this. See, a lot of people have this misconception that, and you'll see this argument on the left a lot, they think that capitalism is a synonym for corporatism. In other words, corporate America is capitalism. They are one and the same. There's no difference. That's actually not true. In fact, there are corporations that love regulation, that love governments getting involved in their business, because it protects them. Because if you're the biggest company in the business, you can afford a lot of lobbyists, you can afford a lot of lawyers, and frankly, it's a lot easier to get a regulation passed and comply with the cost of that regulation than it is to compete with smaller businesses that may not be able to comply. This is exactly the same thing we saw with the EpiPen scandal. You remember that, where they were charging $600 for a two-pack of EpiPens. Well, who was a big fan of that? The FDA, who was lobbied heavily by the company that owns EpiPen. Because there were competitors out there that tried to come up with a similar product to EpiPen, something that gives you an epidural and it's easy to use. But all six of those occasions where they tried to register something that would do the same thing were stonewalled by the FDA, using not exactly the same epidural, not exactly the same drug, just using a different delivery system. But the company that owned EpiPen had paid off the FDA and had lobbied for them, saying essentially, you can't just, we've not only patented the EpiPen and the way that the EpiPen works, we have patented the idea of an easy-to-use EpiPen, an easy-to-use epidural. And so anything that was an easy-to-use epidural could not be patented, ergo, they had stonewalled all possible competition. That's why the cost was up. It wasn't because the company was greedy. I mean, they were greedy. But my point is, the reason that EpiPen had gone so high and skyrocketed is because they had no market competition to keep them in check. And so, a lot of times, what people criticize capitalism for is not free market capitalism. It's crony capitalism. It's government picking winners and losers. And this could be a form of that. I don't know. We're going to get into that in just a second. But it's possible that there were lawn care services that didn't like the neighborhood kids cutting into their business. And so they lobbied their local town council to say, look, these kids have to, we're competing with them. They don't have to have a business license. They should. We have to have a business license, so they should have to have one. I think that's a possibility, and we're going to look into that in just a second. We'll be back. If I ever get out of
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back, guys. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and if you do call in, looks like we've got here a two-pack of tickets to the Biscuits. That's going to be Saturday. That's Harry Potter night. So June 10th. Wait, is June 10th a Friday or a Saturday this week?
June 10th is Saturday.
Okay. So we've got that one right. That has the massive...
9th is Friday, and the 11th is...
So lots of good stuff to look forward to. The Massive Max fireworks, as Scott was saying here in the first hour, they're going to have a brass band out of Auburn to do some Harry Potter music for us as we're going in the door. So this is going to be a big deal. Grab your Gryffindor scarf and your wand and head out to the Biscuits. And if you call in at 860-1440, you can be a winner and get a two-pack of Biscuits tickets for no dollars right here on NewsRadio1440.com. Also, we've got the Top Pop Contest. If your dad won $4,000 to upgrade his favorite spot at home, his man cave, his living room, you could buy a huge TV, upgrade that basement man cave, buy the biggest grill that you've ever seen. You can update the lawn care equipment, buy him some tools, something. Whatever it is, doesn't really matter. But it's $4,000 for your dad this Father's Day. Enter today at newsradio1440.com. You can check out all the details there and give your dad the best Father's Day ever. And buy local, think about our local economy, and shop at our local businesses. You can buy from the local companies here. We've got some great companies here, some really industrious entrepreneurs here. So support our local business, give back to the community. Cumulus Media supports our River Region local businesses, including Frio's Gourmet Pops. Ah, that's what it was. Frio's, it's going to be at the East Chase thing. It's a popsicle place. Okay.
Oh, okay. I could not I didn't see it in front of me either, and at first I thought that sounded like Spanish for beans, frijoles. Or...
Yeah, I thought maybe that was it, and goodness knows I'm not exactly well-versed on the other languages. I almost flunked Spanish in high school. But anyway, so Frio's Gourmet Pops, Focarelli's Pizza, and Cakeaholics, check out those local businesses. Now, speaking of local businesses... And I'm just glad that that happened to segue in. We were talking about there's an issue here in Gardendale, Alabama, where they're now charging kids. They say if you want to mow someone's lawn, that's going to cost you $110 to set up a business with a business license so that you can just mow your neighbor's lawn if that's what you want. If you're a neighborhood kid, you've got to do that. It's possible that this is done just to line the town's coffers. But it is also possible, and I think that this quite possibly could be the case, that this is to protect larger businesses that lobby for it. Because, like I said, it's cheaper to get your neighbor's kid to mow your lawn than it is to have a professional lawn service do it, and that's why people would opt to do that. The thing is, it should be... The argument that's always made is this is done for safety and for quality assurance. In other words, the lawn care service will say, well, we've got years of experience. We have this and that and the other. Okay, but if you're operating in a free market, that ought to be your ploy. You ought to be able to say to Mr. or Mrs. whoever that owns a house in your neighborhood, look, we've got this professional lawn service. We've got people that have been doing this for years. We're going to do a so much better job than this neighborhood kid that it's worth the extra money to pay us to do it quickly and to have everything done correctly. Okay, well, that I'm okay with. That's fine. If that's your, as long as the option is there, I don't mind that at all. But if you're an adult and you own a business and you are losing business to a bunch of 11-year-olds, your business probably should fail. You probably should be losing that extra money that you might be getting otherwise. And so when it comes to something like that, don't try to squeeze your competition out of the market. Beat your competition. See, they're trying to not have the contest. They're trying to, if we're giving a sports analogy here, they're trying to get the other team to forfeit. They're not trying to actually win the game. And that's the difference, and that's why... A lot of times, licensing things like this takes away from the idea of having a free market competition. Like I said, it is a common myth that all businesses hate regulation, but the truth is there are a lot of big businesses that love it. In fact, the banking industry is a perfect example of this. They love those regulations because it means the big banks can comply with them, where these smaller hometown banks, a lot harder to compete with that. They have a hard time complying with some of those regulations. Because in a lot of instances when we're talking about this, it just gets cheaper to comply than it is to compete in that free market. And that's the difference between free market capitalism and cronyism. Now, in this particular situation, I think it's more likely that this was done just to line the town's coffers. And here's why. In this particular industry, with this community, and granted, I don't know a lot about Gardendale, Alabama, but I imagine there are too many lawns for that competition to be worth the business trying to single out anybody that's not a professional lawn care service. I'm not saying that for sure, because again, I wouldn't bring it up if I didn't think it were a possibility. But it seems to me more likely this is just done to line the town's coffers, because there's probably a surplus of demand, which means there's too many lawns for that to be a consideration. But I say that, there was a local ABC affiliate, WBMA, that reported that a man with a lawn care business was threatening to call the city on a girl cutting grass in his neighborhood, an 11-year-old girl cutting grass in his neighborhood. So it is possible that there's just a business that they would rather bully their competition out of business than they would actually compete against a bunch of kids. And that's the real difference between free market capitalism and crony capitalism. Let's go to Michael on line one. Good morning, Michael.
Hi.
Hey, what?
I completely agree with you in your assessment, but I'm wondering what the fine or the penalty is for you going to put an 11-year-old kid in jail for cutting grass?
Well, see, that's the thing. I could not find, because I actually thought about that myself, and we'll talk about that in a second. I was looking for the penalty myself, I think, because it's something that's new. And keep in mind, this is not a license that they carved out specifically for people cutting lawns. It's just that it became a law that they had to enforce this on kids that were going around cutting lawns. So this 110 business tax is the business tax in that city. So
right. Well, any law you come up with,
right.
The only way you can enforce it is to...
there has to be a repercussion for breaking it.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. I imagine this came from a professional lawn care and went to the councilman member and said, hey, look, it's beneficial to me and beneficial to you if you charge a license fee.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably, and that's the thing, I offered these two options as mutually exclusive, but it is possible it was kind of a combination of both. The lawn care people were like, hey, this would help us, and it would help you, you would get a little more money, so it is entirely possible that it was a combination of the two. By the way, Michael, did you want the biscuits tickets that were given away?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, Jody, did you get his information?
No, sir, not yet. We can put Michael on hold and get the information.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Appreciate your call, Michael. Appreciate you calling in and bringing up that question, which I think is an important question. Hang on there, and we'll get Joe. If Joe can't get you on the line the way it is, then call back, and he'll get your information, and we'll get you those tickets. So, yeah, it's a real issue, and it's something that when you're talking about these inner workings of these different businesses, it is possible that it was a combination of the two, that there's a guy maybe, you know, this is just an imagining of mine. I have no idea whether it's true or not. But maybe this guy who's running a lawn care business, he's just saying, well, hey, Cousin Danny, who's on the city council, if we enacted this, then it cuts down on my competition. And on top of that, the town gets a little bit of money off of the top. So I don't know, maybe that was the reasoning behind it, maybe it was a combination of both. Either way though, regardless of what the motivation was, we've kind of dissected and shown why licensing things, especially like this, it doesn't help anybody, it doesn't keep anybody safe. All it does is act as a roadblock to people competing with bigger lawn care businesses. All it is a way to limit the free market to where, because let's be honest, in most of your business dealings, everything should be as simple as, I want so-and-so good or service, and I have money. That should be the extent of that interaction. As long as you have something that the other person wants and the other person has something that you want, and you're willing to trade those two things, whether it's money or whether it's just two different items of trade, that should be as complicated as a business interaction is in this country, at least in most cases. Maybe there's a couple of exceptions to that. Like I said, maybe with medical care or something like that, there are a handful of exceptions where it's life-altering, life-changing. But when we're talking about this, especially when the absolute worst thing that happens is there's a patch of grass that didn't get cut, really we should just consider going ahead and removing any roadblocks to that competition. All right, real quick, did want to mention our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center have been in business here in the Montgomery area for 50 years. They can handle anything that goes wrong with your car. You need an oil change, you need your air filter replaced, you need your tires aligned, whatever it is, they can handle it. They know how to handle it. And if they can't figure out what's wrong with it, they can recommend you to somebody who does. So that's Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway in South Montgomery. Check them out today. We'll be right back. Sugar Tongue.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. Congratulations to Michael. We had a couple extra tickets. I know we usually wait to the end of the show and do a drawing, but the thing is, we were out yesterday, didn't have a show, so we've got a couple spares. So congratulations, Michael. You won that 2-pack of Harry Potter Night. We've got plenty of those to give away, so call in 860-1440 and get your two-pack of Biscuits tickets for this Saturday, Harry Potter Night and the Massive Max Fireworks.
June the 10th.
That's right, on June the 10th. Now, did want to get back to this, and this just struck me as interesting because Michael brought up a good point, and it's on enforcement. How do you enforce something like this? Because it's little kids, and if they're not buying the business license, the reason is probably that they don't have any money, so I don't know how you're going to find them. And on top of that, you can't exactly put a 10-year-old in jail. So you're kind of...
What about their parents?
Right. You're kind of caught in a rock and a hard place here with them. I guess you could enforce that on the parents. But...
Well, the law, and I think in most jurisdictions, a parent is responsible for the willful misconduct of a minor.
Well, yeah, in general, that's true, and because so, they are the legal
guardian. But willful
guardian.
Misconduct. Now, there's your catchphrase.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Are they really going to charge kids that are mowing lawns with a crime? Because whether or not they actually punish the kid or punish the adult, regardless, they would have to charge the child with the crime first. So are they going to be looking out for kids mowing lawns and charging them with crimes if they find them doing so without a license? Now, granted, if this does take place and that's how they enforce it, it is not the police officer's fault. Police don't make laws, they just enforce them. And so when I say this, I'm not picking at the police officers. I'm just saying that when we're talking about law enforcement, it is kind of a funny imagery there of the cops going, yeah, dispatch, this is Unit 26, got a preteen girl in a Hello Kitty shirt on a Cub Cadet on Green Street. Need to check that. Confirm Unit 26, suspect fits the description of Kayla Potts, a.k.a. Unicorn Sparkles. Sending back up your way. Approach with extreme caution. Use of lethal force is authorized. All units in position. Swarm, swarm, swarm. I mean, the mental image there is a little silly, but my point in all of that is, are they really going to start busting random kids mowing lawns around the neighborhood just under the suspect that they may be doing this for profit and don't have a legal business license?
That's such a heinous crime. They may even try. They may even want to try them as adults.
Right. It's
competing with the lawn service.
For goodness sakes, people, it's Gardendale, Alabama. I'm sure there's a meth lab within 1 square mile radius of anywhere.
It's funny you mention that, because I was going to say that without any facts in front of me, but I believe Gardendale is, how shall we say it, low-income per capita city. I'm sort of familiar with it. It's near Birmingham.
Yeah, it's a Birmingham suburb. I'm really not sure. I don't know whether they're a ritzy neighborhood or a poor one.
No.
It sounds like you're saying they're...
No. They've got a small per capita income.
Well, then they got bigger things to worry about than little Joe or little Susie cutting their neighbor's yard for $20. I mean... when you're looking at this...
I can't really imagine Gardendale even having a lot of a lot of lawn service people.
I wouldn't think so, and that's one of the reasons this surprised me, because when I read this story, you know, I figured it was probably a nicer neighborhood. Again, I don't know much about Gardendale. I know it's a suburb of Birmingham, and that was about the extent of my knowledge going into this. So I was also thinking about maybe another mental image. This guy is soliciting, so he sees a kid on their lawnmower, pulls up to his car, rolls down his window, holding a 20 out the window. The cops are coming by like he's soliciting for something else. This just sees a 10-year-old boy on a John Deere is hanging out a 20 trying to get him, and they bust him for some kind of illegal transaction. I don't know. It's just a funny mental image. And if you're a business run by adults and you run a professional lawn care service and you can't compete with 11-year-olds, you should go out of business. I'm sorry, but that's the way that it is. If your business is suffering because of the competition there, then your business probably needs to suffer. And I don't say that through any vitriol or trying to get you, but if there's just not enough demand or whatever it is, whatever the reason may be, if you cannot compete in a free and open market against children, you don't need to be a business. I'm sorry. So that being said, I think that this whole idea really discourages industry and entrepreneurship amongst young people. Because we've seen this happening in other towns across the country, not yet in Alabama, but they've gone after lemonade stands, bake sales. They were actually, they busted up a bake sale for happening without a legal business license, is going after that. And there was some political motivation for that. I want to say that was several years ago. And it was, unfortunately, it was a charity event that they were actually busting these people for having a bake sale trying to raise some money. So I think that this is indicative of the fact that it seems to me more and more that we are raising a generation of pansies. And the reason that we are is because we have put roadblocks into working for pay and earning something.
Okay, the per capita income, first of all, Gardendale, about 13,000 people.
Okay.
We know it's near Birmingham.
So small suburb community.
And the per capita income of the city was $30,748. About 1.9% of families and 3.5% of the population were below the poverty line, including 3.2% of those under age 18.
Okay, so what we're seeing here is...
And 18 and 6.3 over 65. So some of those little people are below the poverty line.
Right, and they're probably just doing this to make a little extra money, whether it's to buy some nice clothes or whatever it is that they may be doing it for. This is, according to that, not, you know, an incredibly impoverished community, but definitely a community with its own level of poverty. 30,000 is above the poverty line, but if that's the average income, but sounds like there's a lot of young people that could really use an outlet to, you know, in some way generate some income, and this would definitely put a stop to at least some of that.
13,711, the 2015 estimate for the entire city.
Right. Well, here's the thing, and this is the problem. The reason that I have an issue with this is that people should be able to learn very early on that work and reward have a connection to one another. That if you have the gumption and the willingness to work, and you can find some kind of good or service that you can provide that people want, that you can be rewarded for that. And that should be a lesson that is taught early and is taught often. Now, this was probably technically illegal, but I think I'm well beyond the statute of limitations, which is why I can talk about this. My first, I wouldn't say real job, but my first job, quote unquote, was when I was 8 years old. My dad was a school teacher, and we would go to school every day because he was an ag teacher, which meant he was on a 12-month contract. He went there during the summer. Well, obviously, I'm not going to school in the summer, so I would go with him most days, and the school secretary was also off for the summer because of the budgeting. So what I would do is I would go up there every day and answer the phones for our principal. I basically was the school secretary for the summer. And this happened a couple of years. But I just used the money to buy, you know, video games and eat out occasionally. I mean, that's really all I used the money for. Because my parents provided everything else for me. But the point is, that taught me very early on that if I was willing to work, if I was willing to give up part of my summer and put in some effort. Now, it was not an incredibly strenuous job, and I didn't get paid a lot for it. I mean, I mostly just played Game Boy until the phone rang, to be perfectly honest. But the point, and I was only making about 10 bucks a day. But the point in all of that is I was willing to do it. I wanted to do it because it gave me a little extra money, and I got the payoff for that. I got to see the reward. And that instilled in me a work ethic very early on. There were other aspects that my parents themselves did with that, but that's the first time somebody else, somebody outside my family, was paying me for work that I did. And it instilled a work ethic in me early on. Now, I wouldn't say that I've got the greatest work ethic of all time by any stretch of the imagination, but part of the reason that I am where I am today is because I think I learned a lot from that first experience that I had well before I would have been under the child labor laws. And again, that probably wasn't technically legal, and if someone had found out, they may have even gotten in trouble. But despite all that, it really helped me, and it was beneficial to me. And you know, I wasn't doing anything with my summer anyway, and so it got me off the couch, got me not playing video games, although in that particular case I was playing a little video game on the side when I wasn't working. But the point on all that is, if we can teach kids to do this earlier, maybe we wouldn't have this generation now that feels like they kind of are entitled to things and shouldn't have to work for things. Maybe that would head off a lot of the problems we're having in our society and head them off before they start. I'm not saying it's a silver bullet and a fix-all solution, but what I am saying is I think that does, if you teach work and reward early and often, in the long run, it creates a better person that is more willing to work for that reward. That's just where I stand on it. All right, Star Spangled Sermon coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and I did want to mention this, because this is a pretty big deal, and I just now realized that this was the case looking on my computer here. Joe, I'm sure that you were unaware of this, and I don't blame you, because, like I said, I pretty much missed it.
There's a lot I'm unaware of. I'll tell you that.
Tomorrow is our 100th episode.
Ooh.
So, as of tomorrow, the Patriot Preacher will be 100.
Whoa, and we'll
be bringing that. Yeah, not 100 years, just 100 episodes. But
of course, you were cutting out. Oh, so we need an engineer. No, of course, you did a lot of shows where before I came on board. So
right, yeah, on Saturday. That's so.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. And it looks like we're going to be. It will be 100. Oh no, wait. I have to take that back. Today is the 100th episode.
Wow.
Because I haven't posted the podcast yet today, so that counts it. Yeah. So today is the 100th episode of The Patriot Preacher. So big milestone. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for tuning in and making us a part of your day or a part of your week back when we were on Saturdays. So really appreciate that. Appreciate everybody listening in. We'll continue to bring you great news coverage and political analysis in the future. So thank you guys for supporting me, getting me to where I was, the Daily Show, and we got to 100 a lot quicker than I thought we were going to, actually. But
no kidding.
It makes a difference when you're doing five shows a week as opposed to one.
Yeah, somebody might want to bake a cake, put 100 candles on it.
Yeah. Well, either way,
congratulations.
Yeah, big milestone, 100 episodes. Thanks, everybody, for supporting me. I did want to get to something far more important, though. I love this little episode in David's life. And one thing that's interesting about the Psalms is you've got books like 1 and 2 Samuel that give us the narrative, what happened in David's life. But really, the Psalms are what give us an idea of who he was. I mean, don't get me wrong, the narratives and the story of your life give us insight into who you are as well. But the Psalms give us a lot of insight into what he was thinking, what he was feeling, what was going through his mind when he was going through these various episodes of his life. So here we have him, King David, struggling with something that is a very deep question that I think bothers a lot of us. It bothers me. I know it has in the past. Why do evil people, why are they allowed to prosper from evil? They do these evil deeds. They do not keep to what we would think of as sound moral judgment. And yet, it seems that in making those bad decisions, they continue to prosper. Sometimes they prosper directly off of choosing to do what's wrong instead of what's right. This is something that David's having a hard time with at this particular point in his life. In fact, he says in this particular psalm, in Psalm 73, that he almost slipped. I think what that means is he was probably tempted to do evil. That when these people, he saw them doing bad things surrounding him, and that they were doing all right, that they were prospering, that they were doing fine, and he was having problems, that he was tempted to just do evil back, to do evil to them and see if that made him prosper as well. He does say that he almost slipped. Those are his words. And then in verse 13, we also see him say, "In vain I kept my heart pure and washed my hands with innocence." David's going through a very human thing that a lot of us that try to do the right thing struggle with. Is it seems like there are people all around us that are doing bad things and being rewarded for it while we're doing the best that we can to try to do things right and try to be honest. And sometimes it's hard and sometimes it doesn't pay off. And so David's really struggling with this question, and it's saying that he's tempted to do evil and to ignore God's principles, God's precepts. because it seems to him like he's doing all he can to keep himself pure and to keep himself innocent. It's just not working. It's not doing any good. He's doing the right thing, but he's not getting anything out of it. And I love this revelation in Psalm 73, 16 through 20. This is later on in that same psalm. When I pondered to understand this, I was troublesome in my sight, until I came into the sanctuary of God. Then I perceived therein. Surely you set them on slippery places, talking about the wicked here. You cast them down to destruction. How they are destroyed in a moment. They are utterly swept away by sudden terrors, like a dream when one awakes. O Lord, when aroused, you will despise their form. David has the answer. He gives us the answer to this problem. Perspective. Perspective is what separates this mentality from the correct mentality. You see, David's looking at this picture of evil people prospering from evil and looking at himself and saying he's doing the right thing and it's not paying off. He's not prospering like they're prospering. And then it says he enters the sanctuary of the Lord and he took a different look at it. See, the problem was not the picture. The picture was not the issue. The problem was David was looking at it wrong. He was looking at it through human eyes. He was looking at it through temporary, physical eyes. He was not looking at it from the spiritual perspective. You see, even more than just the eternal of when people that obey God and do what he asked them to do dies, they get to go be with him in heaven. Even more so than that, because obviously that offers some perspective. That our goal is eternal, the ways of the wicked are temporary, and when they die, they have a second death. But even if you take that aspect out of it, even if you look beyond that, non-believers, they can lose everything in their life in an instant. Tornado comes through, someone robs them, all these physical things that they've acquired, they can go away instantly. David understands that that was the problem with what he was looking at. The things that he has, the relationship with God, knowing that he's right, being able to look himself in the mirror, those are things that can't be taken away from him. He has those things, and they don't. And so that offered him some perspective. It reminded me of a quote by C.S. Lewis, where he said, "He who has God and has everything else has no more than he who has God only." See, once we've got that, once we've got our minds right and our heart right, all that other stuff is just window dressing. And so offering that perspective really helps it. The wicked, they get 15 seconds of fame in this life. That's it. Those who are living righteously, living the way God asks us to, they have an eternal home and family, both in this life and in the next. And that's the correct perspective. Stay the course, friends. It just takes
some time. The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.